Hey, it's good to see you today. If you've got a Bible, turn to Genesis. Hey, let me tell you about the series we're starting today. I usually do in the summer, I'll do a whole series, but I wanted to start it a little bit before, you know, school gets out and graduation and everybody's kind of gone off different directions so you kind of know where we're going. And I always like in the summer to do something from the Old Testament, some kind of, you know, storytelling, basically the pictures that are contained in the Old Testament. And we decided to do Joseph and to share it because there's so much in Joseph. Some of it was up there that you saw. But see, when you talk about the story of Joseph, it's a foundational type story. See, I have to understand that when you look at the Old Testament, there are pictures there and God is telling a story and it begins and it moves. And when you take a look that basically we're going to cover around 25 chapters over the summer of Genesis 25 through Genesis 50. And it ends with Joseph. And the great part about Joseph's life is that we actually have an ending because there's 400 years from the time that the end of Genesis ends and the first of Exodus begins. So it's almost like the difference between Malachi and Matthew, right? There's this, and so you have this great picture. So God is writing a story within this, and there's so much in it. Plus, you think about it. You think about things like temptation. You think of things about like grace, forgiveness, as it said up here, restoration. When you start taking a look at all that's contained in this, it's really pretty cool. And so I'm looking forward to share that with you. So as we jump into this, today's title is just Joseph, a life purpose, okay? Because within this too, there's so much purpose. There's so much to understand about who God is, how He works in one's life. When you think about purpose though, you know, how do you reconcile some of the things that have happened in your life? You know, it's probably some of the greatest question that I'm ever asked by people. And the question always starts with the word why. And you know, I don't know. When you start any question with the word why, I'm going to have a hard time answering you. I can give you some speculations, but see, the cool part of looking at Joseph's life is that we get to see why, right? In his life. Because the scriptures tells us why. We got a crowd of folks in here. I don't know where you've been. I don't know where you've come from. I don't know what's happened to you. But I can tell you this, in this crowd, there's been a lot happened to a lot of people. Well, I'm here to tell you, Joseph can relate. And when you take a look at God's purpose, I want you to know that one of the key phrases, and we're not going to get to it for several weeks, but I'm looking forward to getting to it after we've looked through what we've looked through, is that Joseph looks back at his brothers and said that what you did to me, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And I don't know how that works, but when somebody will do something to you that is wrong, how God, and they meant it totally for your hurt. And yet, God can turn it around and make it good. I don't know how that works, but it worked that way in Joseph's life. And I don't know how God does it in so many lives, but I want you to know that things impact us. And how these things impact us. And when you have to face some of these things like Joseph has to face, he faced 13 years of it. And when you have to face it, it's either going to do one of two things, or here's another huge thing you can learn from this whole series, is that you got one of two choices. You can either get bitter, which a lot of people go that road, or you can say, I'm not going to let this define me. And that's what Joseph did. He just kept moving and kept being who he thought God wanted him to be. And God wound up taking every bit of it and pointing it in a direction that Joseph never saw coming. It's an incredible thing when you think about it. And I want you to hear it. I want you to see it. And so these sections are going to come in sections. I mean, that's classic. These sections are going to come in sections. These sections are going to come in sequence of what I want to share with you. This first section, okay, is going to be kind of like a subtitle, all right? And it's basically how God uses your past for His purpose. And it's something we all want to know and hear and understand, even though I don't know for you individually. So if you come to me and say, you know, Jeff, why did God allow this to happen? Why? And I can't tell you that. I can tell you in Joseph's life because the Bible tells us. But you know, there's not a scripture verses written on your life yet that I can read and say, oh, hey, let me tell you how this and why this happened. But I do want you to know that He does have a plan for those who follow Him. A purpose. That's what Joseph's life tells us. So let me just tell you this. I know summer times, a lot of people are in and out. You got vacations. I've got a vacation that we're going to be going on. And so we'll be going out of town. Different. Make sure you keep up with this because there's enough information here that I think that would give you incredible, what I call aha knowledge. I hear it like this. It's like, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, okay. You see, when something dawns on you, it really does help to, you know there's a purpose. When I would go out, when we would go out and report for sports, for football, especially in college, and you would report, and if you had to go through that torture day in and day out, and not even know why you were doing it, it takes some time. But you go through it when you know, okay, here's where we're going, here's what we're doing. Again, you don't have any idea what God's up to in your life. If you're His. So here's what I'd like to do. Because when you take a look, we're going to how God uses your past for His purposes. And today we're going to start back. I'm actually going to do this a little bit different. We're going to start today with Jacob. Okay? Jacob was Joseph's father. And I want you to know that a lot of what happened to Joseph were because of Jacob's mistakes. I mean, let's face it. All right, Jacob was not the guy. He was not the guy you thought, you know, you'd think would be a patriarch or be a guy in the scriptures that God could use incredibly, but he did. But Jacob was a con artist, basically. And in fact, his name means basically deceiver or liar. You know, how'd you like your name to be liar? Hey, liar. All right. But that was his name. That's what his name meant. Supplanter, whatever you want to call it. And Jacob was later named, God renamed him after God changed his life. God renamed him from liar to basically renamed him Israel. So this guy, this con artist, I mean, there's still a nation in our world today that is named after this guy. A lot of people don't realize that. So when you talk about the children of Israel, you're talking about those who are the descendants of Jacob. So it's an incredible thing when you begin to put all this, and it's like, okay. But I want you to see Jacob because what happens in Jacob and some of the mistakes Jacob makes affect Joseph in a huge way. Huge way. And guys, we know that to be the truth. We see it in our lives, if we're honest. It's something for you to hear, understand, listen to. I know that in my life, I could give you several examples. Let me just give you one. My grandmother, okay, who, believe it or not, she just went home to be with the Lord this past, I think it was October. September, October. And people look at me and go, your grandmother's still alive? Yeah, 97, 98. So she went to be a little, but when she was a little girl, her mother died. And then her father remarried and had another daughter. And then as they were growing up, the new mother didn't want her around. So basically kicked her out and sent her to live with her grandparents. And she carried, my grandmother carried a lot of that with her. Now, I want you to know, think about this. This is a powerful thought. The decisions that people make have impacts on us, do they not? I can't tell you how that impacted our family. It impacted the way my father was raised. And it impacted the way that I was raised. I've been able to see it. So there's several things you can learn from this whole thought here. Your past, but how God can use your past for His purposes. Even though you look at it and say, why? But when He does, when He uses it, it's an amazing thing. And I'd love to tell you, we just don't have time, of how that affected our family. Maybe a little later I will. But when you look at it, when you think about a Jacob and some of the things he did that led to Joseph's life, you know, and when you put all that together to understand how that makes him, we're even talking about mistakes that you could make personally. But also, a lot of you have families in here. A lot of you are young and have small children. I want you to understand that the decisions you make today have huge impact on your kids and on their kids and on their kids' kids. To me, it is an amazing thing to think about, because most of our culture only thinks personally. How does it affect me? You have no idea, or maybe sometimes even think about how it makes an impact on so many around you for years to come, right? And so, again, that becomes this picture, the part of what I want you to see. And so we're going to kind of go back, and we're just going to kind of walk through a little bit of Jacob's life. I'm going to hurry along, okay? We could still be in this series at Christmas time if I don't move it on along, because I'm excited about this. There's so much here that I think that it's going to open up so much of God's direction, God's plan. Because where I'd like to start, I want to take a minute, but where I'd like to start is Abraham. Abraham is a central character. In fact, Abraham is still very much revered today. But Abraham, God made some promises to Abraham. And God said to Abraham, "Hey, Abraham, I want you to leave Ur of the Chaldees." These are ancient texts, ancient words. And I mean, obviously, Ur of the Chaldees, that doesn't even exist anymore, but it was an ancient land. And so God called Abraham, and Abraham left. He was told to leave. Didn't even know where he was going, but it got told him to leave. And God took Abraham and showed him a land. And he says, "I want you to know, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give your descendants this land. This is where they're going to live." And then he took Abraham outside and he said, "Hey, I want you to look up at the sky and you see the stars. This is, if you can number the stars, that's how many descendants you're going to have." So he looks and makes all these promises, that God's promises to Abraham, and really all of it begins with Abraham. As God looks down and sees that the world is pretty much turned away, you know, and come up with all kinds of paganism and other things, he brought Abraham out and separated him. And basically the land we're talking about is where Israel is today. It's when you begin to put it all together, it makes sense, because a lot was going to have to happen before this actually happened. But anyway, so these promises came to Abraham. He was unique. And God made these promises directly to Abraham. And that these promises, God's word, came to them in these promises. And then Abraham eventually had a son. That's a long story. And his name was Isaac. And these same promises were passed on from Abraham to Isaac. And then Isaac married Rebecca. He had twin boys, Jacob and Esau. And Esau was born first, and then Jacob. And it was going to happen through Jacob. And so you're going to see here that these promises are going to go to Jacob. And so this is where it begins. And this is where it all starts, but I needed you to see part of that piece. So let's go ahead and jump and take a look at some of what the scripture says on this particular. In Genesis chapter 25, verse 19. All right, here we go. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son, Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Paddan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. Okay? Circle the word name Laban. We'll come back to him. He's an interesting character. All right? And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled within her, and she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? That'd be a question that so many would ask God today. All right? Why is this happening to me? So she went in to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said, there are two nations in your womb, and the two peoples that are within you shall be divided, and the one shall be stronger than the other. And it says here, the older will serve the younger, which went against the way that it went, the culture of the time, to where the firstborn was to be the leader of the family. And so we have this picture here of something happening, of God's plan and what he's doing through, and the promises that he promised to Abraham that were going to pass all the way down. It was going to actually be, Jacob. All right, so let's take a look at this. Let's jump into it. We've got some things. I just want to give you some backgrounds and some different things, but don't miss how today ends. Let's take a look at it. Number one is what I'm going to call Jacob. All right, Jacob the deceiver. This is who he was. When you look at a guy like this, you know, and you know who I'm talking about. The guy that's always on the con. He's always got an angle. He's always creating a way to manipulate to get what he wants. Or she, however you want to say it. And I'm here to tell you, this was not the type of person, okay, that you could ever trust. Or that you could ever really, if you ever even wanted to be around. This is who he is. In fact, you'll see it come out in the story. But I want you to know that God was going to change his life, and you're going to see a little bit of it today. Let's continue to read. All right. Let's see. The days, verse 24. And then her days to give birth were complete, and behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, and all of his body like a hairy cloak. Okay, ladies, if you have a kid and he comes out like a bear skin, then that's pretty interesting, all right? So basically the picture is that these two boys were totally different. One was rugged, one was bigger, one was covered with hair, but obviously the other one was not. Continue to read. So that they called him Esau. And afterward his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. And when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in the tents. Now look at this. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. Now, we have got two different boys here. We've got two different looks, and you just, again, the scriptures share these quickly with us so you can kind of pick up on them. Okay, you've got Esau, you've got this big guy, you've got this guy who loves being outside, you got this guy who's pretty good hunter, pretty good there then with weapons, the weapons of the time, right? And so you got a guy that just, he didn't like to be at home, he didn't like to be inside, he liked to be outside, okay? And then you got his brother, his twin, who they're exact opposite. He liked to be at home. He liked to dwell among the tents. Obviously, he liked to cook. And they've got this picture then. You've got this picture of a dad who loves one child and a mom who loves the other. And it winds up causing huge problems. It's something to learn. You know, I have found that when you think about personalities, when you think about having children, if God has given you more than one child, to remember that you need to love them. You need to love them whoever they are. Because if you don't, okay, hold on. If you don't, I'm here to tell you, it'll turn sideways on you like it was about to here. But the cause of these problems was that basically Isaac loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob, and there became to be this big fight between them. And let me just throw this out to you, just so you see it, just so you understand, this all, everything that happens here is going to play into Joseph's life. This is the reason I'm going back to talk about it. I want you to understand, when we come to certain sections, I can remind you, hey, but do you remember when? And that's why this is happening here. Because you can take it directly back to some real bad decisions that were made as far back as Isaac and Rebekah. And here's one of them. And so anyway, so you have this picture. You have this picture then, and of it setting it up and why it's going to happen. All right, so we have these two different, we have these two different boys, okay? They're different, obviously, from each other, okay? Now, look at, take a look at verse 29 again. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, let me have some of the red stew, for I am exhausted. Therefore his name was called Edom. In fact, his descendants were called the Edomites. We'll talk about that another time. Let's continue to read. And so Jacob said, hey, sell me your birthright now. And Esau said, I'm going to die. What use is the birthright to me? Swear to me now. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and a little stew, and he ate and he drank and he rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Now, what's a birthright? We don't even understand this concept today. But a birthright was what the oldest child received. It was usually a double portion of the inheritance, but it also was leader of the family and other things like that. But obviously, Esau didn't care about stuff like that. And how you can despise your own birthright is amazing. But he was just, I mean, he was probably young. He was probably foolish. He probably said to himself, I don't care. You know, I just, let me be outside. Let me hunt and fish. I don't care what you and the rest of y'all do. We got guys like that today, right? Just let me hunt and fish. I don't care what anybody else does. I don't care about family. I don't care about, as long as I can hunt and fish. I think that was probably what he was. But notice Jacob, the con man, looking for any opportunity to get what he wants by his own manipulation. So he kind of waits as Esau walks in. He's famished. He's exhausted. He's hungry. And he just wants something. He wants what he wants, and he wants immediate gratification, and he's willing to give anything for it. Hey, guys, anybody know what we're talking about? How many times do we pay a high price to have immediate gratification? And the price you pay for down the line for it. There's so much to learn from these passages. There's just not enough time to tell y'all. So I'm going to hit some of them. We're just going to glance off of them. And for those of you who have ears to hear and can put it together, you can write it down and think on it later. Because I'm here to tell you, there's so much truth in these passages. There's just not enough time to cover them all. But this is Esau. He lives for the moment. My goodness, that's a motto for our culture. Hey, yeah, don't worry about tomorrow. Just live for the day, you know. And it's such stupidity. What our world today would call wisdom like that is such stupidity. Because this was going to wind up following Esau for a long time. This dumb decision over a bowl of stew. But isn't that the way of it? How could I have let something so stupid stand in the way for being who I was supposed to be or who God wanted me to be? But that's the picture here. And so, but the con man wins here, it looks like anyway. He's going to catch up with him. But the con man wins and he manipulates. But a lot of times when you manipulate to get something, it winds up being an albatross that hangs around your neck. So that's what happened. Let's continue to read. Take a look at chapter 27 and verse 1. He also deceived to get his brother's blessing. Gosh, there's not enough time to read all. I'm just going to read a few verses. I'm just going to tell you the rest of the story. But let's read just a little bit. And when Isaac was old, so we're talking about a lot of years later, Isaac couldn't see. All right, his eyes were dim, and he could not see, so he called Esau, his older son, said to him, my son, and he answered, here am I. He said, He basically then goes on to say, behold, I am old and I do not know the day of my death. Now take your weapons and go out and hunt game for me, prepare it, bring it in and serve it up to me. And then I'm going to bless you as my oldest child. Verse 5, now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, I've just heard your father speak to Esau. Now bring me game and delicious food I may eat and bless you before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. All right, now you've got Rebekah in on this manipulation, on this deceit over Isaac. And that's what happens in a family when you begin to divide up and you begin to go at one another. Because that's exactly, and it went as far back as when the children were young and one loved one child and one loved the other. And they didn't make good decisions, and it followed them all the way down to all this stuff. And so now you got Rebekah who's in on the game, and she's telling Jacob what to do. So she's as manipulative as he is. And they want this blessing for Jacob, not for Esau. Now it may not seem like it'd be a big deal to you, but it was a big deal in the culture. In fact, so much the deal that once Isaac had made this blessing to his son, he couldn't take it back. See, in our culture, we don't look at it that way. We don't even have blessings like this. But this was a big deal at this time. And so basically they're gonna con. Rebekah and Jacob are in cahoots to this. And basically, if you don't know the story, let me just tell it to you. So Esau's out hunting, right? He's out hunting. And he says he's going to put all this stuff together. And he's going to bring it back in. Dad's going to bless me and life's going to be great. So he's out hunting. And so what Rebekah does, she goes out and gets a couple of goats and brings it in. And she knows what Isaac wants. I mean, she's been his wife now for years and years and years. She knows how Esau cooks things. So she manipulates the situation, brings a couple of goats in, and she cooks and prepares those, which I don't know if you've ever had goat, but it is awful. I mean, if you ever had, I can't get past, you know, I've had people say, oh, you just haven't had it the way I've cooked it. I don't want it the way you cooked it. It just smells like a goat. And anyway, I digress. So anyway, ADDN kicking in. But let's go back to it. So basically she does all this and she presents it as wild game. And so she's in on this con. And so she has, you know, Jacob go in and Jacob does. And basically Jacob's got a voice that's distinguished. Esau has a voice that's distinguished. My thought is probably Esau's got, you know, one of those voices and Jacob doesn't. And so how are we going to fool that? I mean, he can't see. He's blind as a bat. But how are we going to get past that? And so, you know, they tape, you know, they put hair on the back of his neck and on his hands and. You know, and they fool Isaac, you know, and basically they said, you know, Isaac said, well, it sounds like Jacob. Come closer, puts his hands on him, feels the hair that they've got there to fool him. It fools him. He eats, he gives the blessing, to Jacob. And then Esau comes back hours later and says, hey, Dad, I've got exactly what you like. I've prepared it. And then it said that Isaac began to shake and said, I know what's happened. Your brother has deceitfully stolen your blessing from you. And then Esau says, boy, is he not like his name? And so now we got a real problem. Esau's had enough. And Esau begins, he's so upset that he begins to comfort himself by saying, when Dad dies, there's going to be a funeral for my brother too. So now we got real problems. And it all began real simple, didn't it? When you got a couple of parents who chose favorites and created enemies within one house. Again, I just want you to see it. There's so much, I tell you, so much here. But I just want you to see it as we walk. That's what this summer is going to be about. I just want you to see things perhaps you haven't taken the time to look at. Because there's so many powerful things. Thoughts in here. There's so many things for God wants us to see and learn. So anyway, deceived to get his blessing. And then in chapter 27 and verse 41, I want you to see that he has to run for his life. Okay? He has to run for his life. Chapter 27, verse 41. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. And he basically said, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. And obviously the word in verse 42 gets back to Rebekah. And she sends and says, okay, you're going to have to leave. We got to get you out of here. So she and Jacob in the next passage, they send him to live with her brother. Rebekah's brother's name was Laban. That'll enter into it in the next couple of weeks with a couple of things that are going to happen, because that's going to play into a whole lot. But the whole reason for him having to leave is also going to play into so much of what was going to happen to Joseph. So you have this picture that now he's running for his life. Okay? So we have Jacob the deceiver, number two. We have Jacob the sinner. Okay? I just would call it this because look at what happens when you attempt to get what you want by your own manipulation, by your own devices. You wind up not getting what you thought you were going to get. So what basically this brought Jacob was, take a look at it in chapter 28, verse 10. So Jacob left Beersheba, went toward Haran, and he came in a certain night, and he stayed there that night because the sun had set. And taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. I want you to understand, now we've got Jacob who is literally, okay, he is literally running for his life. He's living out in the middle of nowhere, right? Darkness, basically in the wilderness. I don't know about you guys, but if you're an inside person like Jacob was, he'd never even slept outside. Now, let me tell you this, and I'll be able to judge exactly who has ever experienced this. But how many of you have ever experienced, you don't have to raise your hand, you don't have to do anything, but how many of you have ever experienced being outside, staying outside in the middle of nowhere, okay, and it be pitch black? I'm telling you what, it will freak you out if you've never done it before. I've been in the woods before at night by myself, and I'm here to tell you, I'm convinced that there's a lion behind that tree over there. Your mind plays tricks until you get used to it. Your mind plays tricks on you. Imagine Jacob. He is stuck out in the middle of nowhere. And he's heard all about the animals, the predators that are all around him. And he pulls up a rock for his pillow, which he's never experienced in his life. And he thinks that he's going to get the blessing, right? He's going to get the birthright. And he got both of them, but what's happened to him? He's had to run for his life. Now he's sleeping out in the middle of nowhere with a rock for a pillow. That's what happens. That's the great picture. The things that sometimes you want so desperately are not really what you want when you actually get them, especially if you get them in the way that he got them. So we got this guy now and living and doing and being where he is. Okay? All right. And in chapter 27, verse 41, it says, now Jacob hated Jacob because of the blessing his father blessed him. So now he's got a death sentence on his life. So you got a guy out in the middle of the dark. You got a guy who's had to run from home. And now you've got a guy that's got a death sentence on his life. I just wanted you to see that. Because now that Jacob is in the place that he's in, I want you to know that God can get through to him. You know, sometimes we are allowed to go down to some dark places because it's in those dark places that God has your attention the most. Right? If you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. You know, as long as everything's going well and I've got what I want, you know, and as my mom would say, you're fat, dumb, and happy. You don't really have your attention. God doesn't have your attention. But when you're running for your life, living out in the middle of a nowhere, God has your attention. When you pull up a rock for a pillow, All of a sudden, your attention has been gotten, right? You know, so this number three, this is going to seem weird that I call it this. See, you start out with Jacob the deceiver, then Jacob the sinner and the results of his sin. But number three, you have what I'm going to call Jesus the Savior. And you're going, Jeff, aren't we in Genesis here? You're going to see what I say in just a minute. Just keep hanging with me. I want you to see what God does in Jacob's life. All right? I want you to see how it works. So as he's now, you've got the picture. Okay? You've got your sandals on, you got your robe on, and you're sitting like an audience right there watching this mama's boy sleep with his head on a rock and thinking, that's exactly what you deserve. And so you've got this picture. Now that you're there, I want you to see what God does in his life. You have to remember that at this time there were no scriptures. Moses wrote the book of Genesis. So this is long before Moses ever wrote this. And so there was no God's word written down. So God communicated his word through prophets, through priests, but also sometimes directly, and sometimes through dreams at the time. I don't think that method is used near as much as most people think it is today. But in this time it was. And so now it says that he dreamed. Look at verse 12, chapter 28, verse 12. It says that Jacob dreamed. And behold, there was a ladder set up from the earth, on the earth, and to the top of it reached heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Okay? And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. In other words, Jacob, I want you to understand that the same promises that I gave to Abraham, that's the reason we talked about Abraham at the beginning, he says, are the same ones I gave to Isaac, and now it's passing on to you. Now, I want you to understand a couple of things about this passage. Jacob was not your greatest candidate to be man of the year. He didn't have great virtue. Not even very good character at all. And yet it's incredible to me to watch how God can work in someone's life. It doesn't matter who they are. I'm here to tell you, Jacob is as well known today as any other character in the scripture other than Jesus. Why? Because of what God renamed him, Israel. And yet look at who he is in this place. Okay? A lying, deceiving con artist who's running from his life because he has stolen from and deceived his own brother. And yet God sees something in him. So it's not so much who you are. It's who God can make of you when God begins to work. Well, something happens to him, and he sees this picture of this ladder, or this stairway, as is in some of your, I think ladder is the better translation, but stairway. Stairway to heaven, which obviously was a big song, and it's talked about this picture. But here's the thought about it. Get away from all of those things, and let's just look at it for what it says. Okay? Alright? And so it goes on to say, it says, your offspring will be like the dust of the earth. Okay? And you shall spread, east, west, north, and south, and that your offspring shall be the families, and of which all the families of the earth will be blessed. Obviously, this was something that was said to Abraham that is now given to Jacob. But this is basically saying, Jacob, let me tell you something. There's going to something happen through your family that's going to bless the entire world. And obviously, this is a picture of who Christ is. All right? So basically, God makes another promise to him. He says, behold, I'm here to tell you, I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to keep you safe. Okay? Wherever you go. And I'm going to bring you back to this land. So he makes some promises to him there. Now, I want you to see something about, mainly about this ladder. What does a ladder do? Again, just think about it a second. What does a ladder do? A ladder is something that allows you to reach something that you could not reach on your own. So obviously the ladder here, like so many illustrations in the scriptures, are a picture of who Christ is. What is it that is in our lives that allows us to be connected with who God is? Therefore, when you pull out a ladder and you climb up on a ladder, you're able to reach something that you're not ordinarily able to reach. You know, in some of the classes that teach people how to share their faith, a lot of times people use the bridge, what they call the bridge illustration. You're on this side of the cliff, and there's another cliff over here, and there's a big chasm, right? And then you put the bridge there, and it connects the two. The bridge is the same thing as a ladder, it just looks different. Does that make sense? It's the same picture, it's the same illustration, it's the same story that is shared throughout the scriptures. What is it that makes a relationship with God possible? In this case, it is symbolized by the ladder, which is a picture of who Christ is, that connects the two, that makes a relationship with God possible. And so this is what's happening to Jacob. Okay? This is what he's seeing. You'll see it in just a minute in his response. Okay? And you'll see the difference that it makes. It makes possible a relationship with God. And then the resources of the ladder is what are going up and down the ladder, obviously, and the resources we need to do and to be what God called us to be. So we have then this picture of it bringing God's promises, His presence, His protection, and His purposes. And it all has to do with this ladder. Interesting, isn't it? For those of you who have ears to hear. Which brings us to number four, and this is where I'll close. And it says here, this is where Jacob becomes, I don't believe he is a believer up to this time. Oh yeah, you know, his father and grandfather has told him, you know, or at least his father has told him all the promises. Oh yeah, God, I've heard that one, I've heard that one. But now it becomes personal. See, you don't become a believer. You're not a Christian because your parents or grandparents were. You're a believer because you've had an experience with who He is. You've understood the ladder in your life and you've put your faith and trust in it as you're about to see that Jacob is about to do. Guys, I'm here to tell you, God has no grandchildren. Zero. He only has children. Therefore, it doesn't matter if you were brought up in a Christian home. It doesn't matter if your grandfather, I've heard this, somebody say, well, my grandfather was a preacher. Well, God bless you, but that doesn't mean anything for you. My children, okay, are PKs, but that means zero for them personally. Until they've come to a certain time in their lives that they've understood this ladder, bridge, okay, whatever you want to call all of the different illustrations it talks about, it's going to provide a way for you to have a relationship with who God is and putting your faith and trust in it. Now you see the parallel. Now you see the picture. Now you see the symbolism of this ladder. So what does Jacob say? Well, let's take a look at it. He basically wakes up. Okay. And this is what he says. And he awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord's in this place and I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? There is none other than this is none other than the house of God and the gate of heaven. So early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that had been under his head and he set it up on a pillar, and poured oil on top of it. And he called that place Bethel. Okay. Bethel. Bethel's interesting, right? Bethel, there's been several colleges, many colleges around the world that are called Bethel. It's because of this particular story in the scriptures. But take a look at the word Bethel. Okay, as I've told you before, the E-L is the Hebrew word, generic word for God. So you see any of your names, then end in the word E-L, the E-L means God. Therefore, Samuel, okay, Daniel, Ezekiel, that E-L at the end means God. The front part of your name means something else. Okay, but E-L means God. Beth, or as our Jewish friends would call it, Bet, means house. All right. So basically, Bethel means the house of God. All right. Therefore, you know the word Bethlehem. Anybody ever heard of that? All right. Beth means house. Lechem means bread. Just means house of bread. That's all it means. So therefore, there's this picture of now Jacob is naming this place God's house, or the place where I met him. Is basically what he's saying here. Let's continue to read. Just so you know. Just so you understand. All right, take a look at it. But the name of the city was Luz at first. The word Luz means separation. Interesting, the symbolisms that are drawn here, huh? You go from being separated to being joined. Let's read the rest of it. Then Jacob made a vow saying, all right, here was Jacob's basically his prayer of salvation. If God will be with me and will keep me in his way, that I will go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Lord, I am putting my faith and trust in you. As I close today, I want you to know that from this point, Jacob was never the same person again. I want you also to understand that doesn't mean he was perfect. He's still got some other things to learn. And he's also still got some consequences to pay for from some of his bad choices. But I want you to know that he had an experience with who God is here. And he put his faith and trust in him. And while he wasn't perfect, God still had a lot more to teach him. But I do want you to know he put his faith and trust in who God is. Take a look at the rest of it. The Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. So basically, he's as Abraham had given a tithe to Melchizedek. Now Jacob was saying, I'm here to God. I'm going to be faithful to you in all parts of my life, even the financial part. Right here at the beginning. Of course, at the time, he didn't have anything, so doesn't seem like a big deal to make it now. It will later, because he's going to wind up being a real prosperous person. But I want you to know that as we close today, you know, this is what's so incredible to me. There's always a time to begin. Listen to my thoughts and my heart here. There's always a time. And the Bible describes it in many different ways. Here it's Bethel. Jesus in John chapter 3 called it being born again. Why did Jesus use the birth analogy? Because to us, to all of us, birth is a place of beginning. You see, there's always a place to begin. Okay, look at me. This is why it scares me when I ask somebody. I can't tell you how many times this has happened. When I ask somebody, hey, are you a believer? Are you a Christian? Has there ever been a time in your life that you've had in Jesus Christ? And they respond to me, well, I've been a believer all my life. No, you haven't. Right? No, you haven't. Nobody has been a believer all of their lives. Why? Because there comes a time in your life that you understand who God is. And you have an experience and you put your faith and trust in him and it changes you. Okay? That doesn't happen at birth. All right? That's why when we talk about baptism, guys, I think baptism ought to be your choice, don't you? Not something that happened when you had no choice. That's why we do baptisms. Why we talk to people about it. Hey, listen, the decision to follow Christ is yours. Not your parents, your grandparents, or anyone else. It's yours. And it's a decision that you make. I want you to know that this guy was Abraham's grandson. Man, if anybody was a believer, he was. Right? Even though he was a conniver. Look at his bloodlines. I couldn't care less what his bloodlines are. Because he's at this place now, and he understands. And he says, God, the Lord, he is going to be my God. That shows up to this point that the Lord was not his God. Right? Incredible. So has there ever been a time in your life you've had have you ever been to Bethel? That's a great way to ask it. Have you ever been to Bethel? To where when you went there, you've never been the same since. God made the difference in your life. That doesn't mean you were perfect. That doesn't even mean you were close to perfect. Because you're going to find out in Jacob's life, this doesn't make him perfect. He is still going to screw up royally. But I want you to know he's got someone in his life now. There's something different about who he is. Interesting. Has there ever been a Bethel in your life? Has there ever been a Bethel in your life? Therefore, you've come to the point in time where you've understood the ladder. It's not just some ladder in a dream, like, what in the world does that mean? No, you got it. You understood it. There's that makes sense. That's why Jesus would say, and you hear me say it as often as I can, for those who have ears to hear, you need to hear this. In other words, has there ever been a time where you've woke up and seen what the ladder really means? Right? Or is it still just a religious ritual? Or is it, nah. And that's fine. The question I ask you, has there ever been a time you've understood the ladder and you say, like Jacob, that's where my trust is going to be. You're the one I'm going to follow. It's an incredible thing. So as we kick this series off, it begins here. Because I do want you to say this decision that is made right here also affects Joseph's life for the rest of his life. Because there is something that makes Jacob a child of God, that brings God into his life, that eventually is going to bring God into his family's life and all that was going to happen. So it's a pretty amazing place, this place called Bethel. That's why there are so many churches today named Bethel Church or Bethel Baptist or Bethel Methodist or Bethel College or University of Bethel or Bethel, you know, Maryland. Or just why? Because there was such a huge event happened right there. Has it ever happened in your life? If there's never been a time in your life you've had that. Guys, see, that's what I'm saying. It's not about a ritual. It's not about going to church. It's not about going through catechism class. It's not about anything else. Have you ever understood the ladder and put your faith and trust in Him? That becomes the symbolism, the picture of it here. So again, as I close this service, there's never been, there'll be some pastors up here afterwards that would love to talk to you about what that means. What Scripture teaches, it says who Christ is and the symbolism of the ladder, even though it's pretty, for those who have ears to hear, it's pretty straightforward. Also, remember this. If there's never been a time in your life that, I mean, if you've become a believer and you've put your faith and trust in Him, or maybe that happens today, and there's never been a time that you've followed in baptism, hey guys, I'd encourage you to. It's right out, in fact, never easier. Next week, it's one of the coolest things we do when we all meet down at the beach and celebrate with people who have already made this decision, who are just celebrating at the beach, this baptism. So if you'd like to be baptized, it'd be a great time. This is actually the cooler of our three beach baptisms, if you'd like to be at it. But you can go right outside. There'll be some men at a table that'll sign you up. And it's a pretty cool thing. So again, as we close, I am very much looking forward to this series and for us to learn from so much that you're going to find here in these chapters in Genesis.